G7, number 10B.
So again, we can see that it all depends on consciousness. So that the sum total of human misery, Mr. Zeta says, finds full compensation in the law of love. A full compensation. So that instead of seeing human misery, we can see the idea of love. Not only that we can see the idea of love, namely that hatred and torment brings the experience which at last lifts us to behold the great city, so that the very circumstance which suffering sends, that's one kind of consciousness, that your suffering sense deems wrathful and afflictive, the other consciousness, namely love, can make an angel entertained unawares. We are not even aware of it, but we can make it to be we become aware of it. So the very same thing happens again. It depends on consciousness. Do we have a consciousness of human misery, or do we have a consciousness of the holy city? It depends again on us. We are the ones who define the sum total of human misery. We are the one who blame the world, how chaotic it is. We do that. What reality says the world is chaotic? There is no reality that says that. We say it. We define that world chaotic, and we define it quite rightly from the human standpoint. But nobody asks us to stand at the human standpoint. Nobody can hinder us to change that standpoint and change it to the standpoint where we see the holy city and where we entertain in our consciousness the model of being. That's up to us. But not only that, he goes further and says, this holy city that comes down is the Lamb's wife. That's a funny expression, a symbol. The Lamb's wife. Well, it means, what does Lamb mean? Lamb means the spiritual idea of love. If you are the wife of that Lamb, of that idea, of the spiritual idea of love, if we are the wife of it, then we are wedded to it, and we are one with it. So the Revelator asks us to be wedded, to be married. The marriage comes right afterwards, to be married, to be wedded with that vision, and not to fall away again, to be wedded and bound forever to that vision. That is the lamb that slays the wolf. That's something that Revelation tells us over and over. You know, in another circumstance or in another passage in the Revelation, Revelator says the following about the lamb, and I like that because it goes right against our human attitude. The Revelator says, worthy is the Lamb that was slain. Worthy is that Lamb that was slain. When we are slain by criticism, by attacks, by don't know what, misapprehension, misunderstanding, and so on. Blessed, worthy is the Lamb that was slain, namely to receive what? To receive power, riches, wisdom, strength, honor, glory, blessing. That's why the lamb can slay the wolf. Can you see? We always have another attitude, humanly, that we think that if we are attacked, we have to fight back. If we are not fighting back, that we are a lame duck. we should really have the guts to beat back and to take the sword of spirit and beat back. You can do that. That's on the level of Christian Science. You can do that. But if you grow into the science, you don't do that anymore, because you feel, who am I that I can say you are wrong? Who am I who can say you should be changed? Who am I who says you should be punished? Who am I? Am I God Almighty to do that? I have to leave that to another power, to another authority than to me. And therefore I must leave it to another method, namely, let the Christ come to a situation and do that job which the Christ wants to do, and not what I think is right and what I think should be established. That's a terrific thing, to have that trust, to have that security, to let really the right idea, the lamb, slay the wolf. And we don't lose anything. We think if we are not defending ourselves, if we are not correcting a situation, if we are not beating back, and if we are not doing all that, that we are losing something. We are not. I have experienced that over and over, because thank God I had a mother who taught me that when I was a young boy. I couldn't come home and say, well, so-and-so was bad to me and so-and-so isn't nice to me. I couldn't do that. She says, think of the lamb that is slain. Let yourself be slain, but keep to the idea, and you will see you will have power and riches and blessing and whatever is said here, and wisdom and strength and honor and glory. You will get that. You will not lose anything by not fighting back. You will not lose anything. So this is what Revelation tells here, you see, that we should be married to that Lamb consciousness, that the woman really is that woman which is married to the idea of love, and let the idea of love operate in being. It is interesting here to see something else. When Mrs. Eddy is speaking about this kind of revelation of love of the woman, she takes in a previous passage, she takes in something that is quite interesting. Namely, she speaks about one thing, namely about the idea as one. And she speaks about that correlation of principle and idea in two different ways. Again, we get two different definitions of the same thing. Namely, in one occasion, she talks about that correlation of principle and idea by saying that it is bringing harmony to earth. And then shows it through Jesus. She brings in Jesus. Revelation doesn't bring in Jesus as a symbol. She said, Jesus showed the coincidence of the human and divine, as divinity embracing humanity in life and demonstration, reducing to human perception and understanding the life which is God. It's a long passage, but I go over it again and pinpoint and stress what is in, here under discussion. She goes back to Jesus about the correlation of principle and idea, and shows that at Jesus' time and in Jesus' mission, what he had to fulfill in the 5,000-year period, which is another period than our period, that in the 5,000-year period, that same thing, the correlation of principle and idea, was standing for what? Was standing for the coincidence of the human and divine. Can you see? It is on the level of Christian Science. He showed that coincidence of the divine and the human by healing the sick, by healing the sin, by raising the dead, by solving all the various problems. He was using the correlation of principle and idea in the 5,000-year period. That was his job, that was that period, to show the level of Christian Science, which, as she says, it was that divinity was embracing humanity and reducing to human perception the understanding that life is God. Then she brings in, instead of Jesus, she brings in the woman. The woman, indicating now the 7,000 or 6,000 and 7,000 year period, our period, the period of the woman. And then she talks about the same thing, the correlation of principle and idea. Then she says the woman illustrates the coincidence of God and man, not the coincidence of divinity embracing humanity. Can you hear that? But it is on a higher level to show the relationship, the coincidence of God and man as the divine principle and divine idea. There is not one term in it that has anything to do with the human. Not one term in it. That's because she's just speaking on a higher level, on the level of absolute Christian Science and divine science. So can you see how we have to be aware how to interpret the text? The interpretation of a text is not only to interpret a sentence as it's stated. The most interesting thing about text interpretation is naturally the comparison of statement with other statements. Because if we compare, for instance, as I have shown you, the coincidence of principle and idea, and you compare what she says, how Jesus was using that, and how the woman is representing that, then we get two completely different pictures, completely different levels of consciousness, so that we can see that each level is spiraling up and brings in a higher sense of the same thing, of principle and idea. Which means that we have to be aware that we are always asking ourselves, under which category does she write? What category does she mean? So that we are able to see the differentiation of altitude of consciousness. And therefore, only through that differentiation we can see, oh, I'm still mainly on the level of Christian Science, all what I'm interested in it is divinity embracing humanity. That's wonderful, you know, when the dear God Almighty is taking care of me and my children, of my baby, and of my husband, and of my wife, and of my business. That's wonderful. That's what I really want. Huh? It's right. But it is only the level of Christian Science. It's a relationship of truth to error. But that's not all of Christian Science. The textbook is much more than that. The text is speaking about other things than just always the divinity embracing humanity, divinity coming down to humanity. It's also showing what is the science of Christian Science. What is the principle interpreting itself through its idea as science? That's also the unity of principle and idea. So, can you see? Text interpretation is something very, very gentle, not gentle, very subtle. Yeah, can you say that? Is that not the derogative meaning now? Very subtle, huh? It's fine. It's yes. It's woven into a very fine web, huh? And so that I try to, at least in this chapter, to show you that the text is not alone that which in which we are interested. It is to show the difference, how one level is brought up to a higher level, and that higher level to still a higher level, so that we can see, where am I? If I, through that interpretation, see that I'm constantly interested in the relationship of truth to error, then I know that I'm not progressing. And I know that. And that is what is necessary in order to progress, is first to see that I have to progress to something higher, and what that higher is. It's no use to say you have to grow spiritually and you have to go higher and higher spiritually when you don't know what the higher is. We have to know what the higher is. Then we can really take in that consciousness of the higher. Yes, so that is what she calls love wedded to its own spiritual idea. Yeah. Actually, you know that the spiritual idea is then represented through the holy city, the city foursquare, and then she explains the city foursquare, and then she translates that city foursquare to the city of our God, and then she translates the city of our God to the four cardinal points of the city foursquare, so that we have three different explanation and interpretation of that New Jerusalem. Again, for three different levels of consciousness. So we know now what these levels are, and we can now define to ourselves where we are spiritually, and therefore can see what is the next higher step and see what it involves. Yes. And I saw no temple therein. He comes to a climax and says, I saw no temple, not a body therein. Think of it. Do we have a Christian Science teaching? Or I would say, do we have a Christian Science consciousness wherein there is not a body? Wherein there is not the people universe? Do we have that? No. Let's be quite honest. No, we don't. We have a people universe. We haven't touched really the altitude of revelation. But we should know it, we should be aware of it and say, golly, again I think about the people universe. Let that go to hell, that people universe. See, hell to it. And go back and say, I have another universe. I have a universe of ideas. Then you don't have any more pain and tears and wars and the rumors of wars as calamities and crises, etc., etc. We can have it. It's laid into the palm of our hands. We can just take it. So I saw no temple therein, which Mrs. Eddy says shows the real man's incorporeality. The incorporeality of man. Do we sometimes think of the incorporeality of man? How that man looks like? If it hasn't ears and noses and eyes and hair and so on? Huh? Quite incorporeal. That's what we have to entertain and culture. And we may not arrive at that point, as she says, in our lifetime, but at least we can make the first step. To start the right way, she said, is doing already a lot. It's doing already a lot. And we know, do I have some time? Yeah. Okay. You see, do you remember in the fourth chapter, perhaps when you were studying it, that she was talking about death and what happened after death? And she gives two answers. She gives more or less those two answers. I don't quote it, that I don't have the text right before me, but she gives two answers. She says, well, as the tree falls, so it lies. More or less saying, well, you wake up the same way as you died. You haven't made any progress. But she also says that if we have had a good preparation in life, that we will wake up in the new realm of science, in the spiritual realm. So our years here, our experience here, will already define what kind of a life after so-called death we have. What is the afterlife? And it is already put into the palm of our hand again, what kind of a life we will have. We can't say anymore, I don't know what happens afterwards. Nobody has come back and told us how it is. But we know one thing, namely, in science, and science is something that is universal, that has no beginning, no end, that has no birth, no death. In science, we have the unfoldment of life. If we have given really our attention to the unfoldment of spiritual life, then we have spiritual life. If we don't have unfolded now a spiritual sense of life, we don't have a spiritual sense of life afterwards. Certainly not. How should we? Death doesn't change anything. It just shows that we should see that if we have here in the apocalypse that tremendous demand that we should see man as incorporeal, not as a body. I saw no temple therein, not a body therein, not a person therein. If we culture that, then we certainly will have a higher sense of life and a higher sense of afterlife. In divine science, man possesses this recognition of harmony consciously. We can be conscious of it. That's the wonder of it. That we have it in our hands. The material sense of personality yields to the incorporeal sense of God and man, as the infinite principle and infinite idea, independent, infinite idea. In this divinely united spiritual consciousness, what is that? United, divinely united spiritual consciousness. Well, when we see the model of being, there all the categories of being are united. If we have a spiritual sense of that chart, then we have this divinely united spiritual consciousness. And there, in that consciousness, there is no impediment to eternal bliss. Can you see that science is self-evolving, self-unfolding? There is no end to paradigm shifts. It will shift and shift and shift until we come to the perfectibility of God's creation. Love is the light of it, and divine mind is its own interpreter. Again, that wonderful sense of love and mind, and which says, you see, love is always wedded to its idea. But that is so if you know it or don't know it. But if you like to experience it, you have to know it. So you have to go to the divine mind. And in that divine mind, you must have that love which knows only its own idea and is never separated from that idea, is never divorced from that idea. Is always wedded to it and married to it, and it's one. That's the spiritually united consciousness. Another point I want to bring out is that question of spirit and matter. I want to show retrospectively in this chapter how she deals with the question of matter. First, on the level of Christian Science, when she was talking on that level, she said that matter is put under the feet of the woman in that symbolism. The moon is under the feet of the woman. So you have the woman and you have matter. You have both. But the night of materiality is waning. So she said something is happening, that these two are not two realities, but that there is a relationship between the two. So that the universe begins first to be tributary, or material universe, tributary to spirit. But there are still two. Still two. That under the supremacy of spirit, matter must disappear. She doesn't say has disappeared. She said must disappear. You see, again, there is still some kind of duality there, though you begin to see, naturally on the level of Christian Science, that the spirit is more powerful, that the spirit is over matter, that matter is tributary to spirit, so it must finally give in, matter must finally disappear. But it's still there. When we come to absolute Christian Science, in the text, then she begins to say that matter and spirit are states and stages of consciousness. It's already saying it's not so that there is spirit and that there is matter, though matter must disappear. It already says it's actually not that. It's actually a state of consciousness. And it depends on your state of consciousness if you have a spiritual universe or if you have a material universe. But when we come to divine science, you get really to the pinnacle of it. There she says that material sense is destroyed forever. It's not being destroyed. It isn't so that it will be destroyed. It's destroyed. It's finished forever. It's no more there. The city is wholly spiritual. There is no temple in it. There is no matter in it. There is no body in it. Can you see how in divine science you actually have resolved that question of spirit and matter by seeing matter is not a question at all? There's no more a question. That has disappeared. Because if we go out from the standpoint of the holy city, from the standpoint of love, and love wedded to its own spiritual idea, there is no room for another concept. So the concept of matter not even enters into the discussion. It has disappeared. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. Okay.